Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, big win.
And we're just, you know, we're doing it live. As a wise man once said,
"Well, do it live. Fuck it. Do it live."
Yeah.
Dude, we're doing it live.
We're doing it live.
Thanks, Bill O'Reilly.
"Well, do it live. Fuck it. Do it live."
I love it.
That's a great clip.
Dude, we just rolled in from the Sharks 3-2 win over the Caps.
Yeah.
Real strong home win after the long tennis road trip,
yep.
Which ended up quite nicely for the Sharks with a win in Nashville after a few less than stellar endings in New Jersey and Florida, dude. Where would you like to start, my friend?
Well, we could start wherever we want. Let's get the bad out of the way first. It was a really good road trip. The thing that was a little bit of a bummer is the fact that it really seemed like they left 4 points just on the table,
right,
against New Jersey and Florida. And although it should be said that New Jersey is, you know, at near the bottom, although they have passed over the Islanders, they are ahead of the Islanders as of today.
Whoop-dee-doo!
Wow! But at the time we played them, they were 9-0-2 in their last 11 or 12. So, I mean, they got a new coach, they got Jacques Lemaire, and they went on this massive tear. And even Puck Daddy, who is a Devils fan, it should be said, is... you know, a little bit giddy about the fact that I think at the beginning of January, the Devils were almost 30 points out of the playoffs, and now they're like 15 points out of the playoffs. So they've cut the margin in half, but the chance of them making the playoffs is still pretty slim. But we didn't face the horrible Devils team that we saw early in the season. This was actually a fairly decent Devils team. That being said, it certainly doesn't excuse the fact that the Sharks were up again in the third period and gave up two late goals to lose. That's exactly what happened with Florida. And after those two losses, you think how tight the Pacific Division is. It still is tight. I think the Sharks have taken the Pacific Division lead as of this exact instant, which could change moment to moment.
I think it just changed actually right now.
It might have. But you think about those 4 points that they really should have had, and
right.
it really leaves a bad taste in your mouth about, geez, you know, it's like, God, two teams. Florida in particular is not a very good team. And I don't know why we let them back in the game. It just seems like the Sharks are having trouble scoring. And even tonight, you predicted a 3-1 win. Your prediction almost came true.
Oh, it was so close.
And but still, it seems like the Sharks are struggling to score. Isn't that the case? I mean, is that the...
I guess you're right. I mean, we had 50 shots in Nashville.
Right.
Not a lot of shots tonight. I don't have the number in front of me, but I believe it's in the low 20s, dude.
I think that's right.
If I remember correctly. So they scored 3 goals tonight against a team that was gutting it out
mm-hmm.
in Washington, who had a barn burner last night in
yeah.
Anaheim. A very emotional win. Semin hat trick, right?
Yep.
7-6. That totally hosed our fantasy goalie situation. The
this
funny part
true.
About this is that I actually had considered picking up McElhenney as well, because
yeah.
I was like, oh, well, Hiller is on IR and Ray Emery's nowhere to be found yet, so I'm going to pick up McElhenney. They're hot. I'm just going to go for it. Can you imagine if I played both of them?
Oh, my God.
In the same game, give up 13 goals, one shot. Oh, brother.
That would have been terrible. Yeah, well, let's talk about the Caps game. So, I mean, it started out great. There was a Alex Ovechkin, Douglas Murray feud from the drop of the puck.
Uh-huh.
There was a little bit of a scrum happening right in front of the Capitals bench as soon as the game begun. There was some extracurriculars, extra shots being taken after things should have probably broken up. And that sort of seemed to continue throughout the first period before things sort of settled down in the second. And the Sharks scored a shorthanded goal late in the first period, which was great because I thought the Capitals really took it to the Sharks early in the game, and the Sharks didn't look that great. There was a lot of zone time for the Caps, and then Joe Pavelski scores a shorthanded goal, but then Alex Ovechkin comes right back and makes up for actually his pretty poor play of a 2-on-1 in the shorthanded situation and scores on the power play to make it even, and then things sort of stayed until the third, which I got to give you some more credit.
Thank you, dude.
It went almost exactly as you said. You said, last night these guys play, they almost put up two touchdowns between the two teams, and they're going to run out of gas in the third, and that really became evident as the game wore on. The Capitals just got a little bit sloppier. They got a little bit slower, a little bit more dumping, a little bit less of that fast-paced, you know, traditionally what people call the European puck possession game. And the Sharks finally managed to take advantage of that that situation. It seems like a lot of these games on the road trip, they'd have the puck, they'd have a lot of zone time, and then yet not a lot of goals would come out of it. So Ryan Clough got some garbage.
I bought my Ryan Clough t-shirt during the second intermission, and Chloe, thank you very much. It was my night to be right on the predictions.
You were right on, dude.
I just had a feeling the Caps were going to run out of gas, and I mean, if there's any team that the Sharks have their number,
it's
the Capitals. We seem to beat them every time.
I think there was a stat on the stat sheet tonight on the back, you know, when they have like the sort of the little anecdotes, the little weird stats about the team, and I think the Sharks were 12-4 or 12-2 over their last 14 against the Caps. And I mean, I certainly remember some blowouts the Sharks have laid on the Caps in the last few years. I certainly remember a 7-1 beatdown one time at the Tank not that long ago with Ovechkin in the house, no less.
Right.
I mean, they were missing Mike Green. That's a big...
Oh, that's a major part of their team. But still, I think it was a good effort for them on a back-to-back night to come into San Jose. That's a tough act to follow. They played hard. But the Sharks, just with the quadruple deflection, were able to get that goal.
That's something I've never seen before. A shot from the point from Boyle.
It sure looked like it was Boyle's goal.
Yeah, right? I'm like, okay, Boyle. And we're all cheering. And then it turns out the actual scoring play, and reading some tweets after the game from the Sharks official stream or whatever, it seemed like it went off a Capital and three other Sharks, and Danny Heatley ended up with the goal. So go figure. Dan Boyle puts the shot in just the right spot, or, you know, in a good spot for it to go in, and he gets a big fat zilch on the scoreboard because of it.
I don't want to put a damper on the mood, but the Sharks are not leading the Pacific Division. Phoenix did win tonight.
Oh, okay.
They were able to beat the Thrashers 4-3. So we're right on their heels, but as everyone knows, the Pacific Division is so tight that actually all five teams, if the season ended today, everybody would make the playoffs.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
And can you remember a scenario where every team in a division made the playoffs?
I believe this was asked on either a telecast or on the radio, and I think somebody answered that not before the current incarnation of the divisions. I think back when you had the Campbell Conference and all this kind of thing.
Right.
When I think they had four team divisions at one point, I think there was a time when all four teams in a single division actually made the playoffs.
So no team in recent history.
That's correct. That's correct.
Recent.
That's
so
true.
That's exciting.
Well, dude, what else happened at the game?
What else happened at the game? My wife sang the national anthem.
Yeah.
Again, and we also were spotted.
Yes.
We had a dude's spotting.
I know.
Our friend Joel,
yeah.
Is that right? Joel?
Our new friend, Joel.
Our new friend, Joel, who we assume is listening. He said he listens, been listening for quite some time, came up to us in front of our hangout, which is Una Mas Tacos. You know? We were enjoying a classy,
place,
light beer. And it was awesome to meet him. He came up to us and said, hey, recognize us from our sterling YouTube videos. I'm surprised that he noticed us not being in the snow.
Yeah, that's true.
It was our last masterpiece, but it was really cool to meet a listener, and now we know the listenership's up to at least two.
Yeah, him and my mom, although I'm not sure my mom listens.
So now it's just one.
Okay.
Joel, thank you.
Thanks, Joel.
Thanks for coming.
It was cool. It was nice to meet him, and it was cool of him to come up and say hey, and that was fun.
Some other news tonight. Vlasic out during the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any news, or did you hear anything on the way home about Vlasic?
No.
Pretty tight-lipped right now.
Yeah, they're so tight about injuries and stuff. They never say how, especially during a game, they're going to want to do some medical tests. They're not going to want to say anything about how serious it is or what it's about. So, but one thing we saw, and I think the date on the post was right when the game started,
7:33,
and that's Nick Petrecki and Tommy Wingles are getting called up. So, are they just what's that about?
I've been thinking about this on the way over here, dude. And it really is a little bit puzzling, to be honest, because we saw Derek Jocelyn warming up. So I guess we have to assume that Jocelyn is the player that's going back the other way.
I think so. You know, why would they just bring up two more people?
We certainly don't know about the status of Nidamaki still. I mean, he's not on IR, right?
Well, he wasn't listed amongst the scratches.
Oh, maybe he is on IR.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think Jocelyn was the only listed scratch tonight.
Yeah, that is correct.
Yep.
So what I don't understand is that for a team that's trying to save every penny
mm-hmm.
in order to maybe make a trade or maybe not, they're bringing up their most expensive prospect in Nick Petrecki.
That's right.
Who's making $1.1 million. I mean, now he's not going to get that in one day, but
right.
you know, his daily cap hit is, you know, higher than Ben Eagers, Scott Nichols, Kyle Wellwood's, Jamal Mayers. I mean,
right.
That's kind of a mighty pill to swallow to sit on the bench, dude.
Yeah, I think so. Well, so, now that Vlasic's out, maybe he actually might get some playing time.
But that wasn't the intent.
No, not
when they brought him up.
No.
So it may sort of ironically work out. I mean, yeah. I don't want Vlasic to miss any games. He finally, you know, he's been playing pretty well
yeah.
the last month or so. Even Tommy Wingles is making $875,000. So you're bringing up $2 million in bench help.
Right.
Like, guys who are going to watch from the press box. I mean, that's sort of what David Pollock is implying in his Working in the Corners blog. He's saying, well, don't necessarily expect that these guys are going to be on the ice. They might just be getting some seasoning mm-hmm. and like some experience being around a team that's making a playoff push. Dude, does that make any sense to you?
Well, it does if the context is the Sharks aren't going to make a trade, and that's certainly going to be a theme here. Well, I guess we only have
10 days.
10 more days. So we only have this week and next week in terms of podcasts before the trade deadline. So I think that's going to be a big thing we should talk about this week. I know we had some tweets on that, dude. We have some emails on that. So why don't we hit those things?
Can I share a theory real quick?
Go ahead.
I think Nick Petrecki is playing Saturday night. I think the plan was to play him against the Avalanche, a team that is on the severe downward slide. And that maybe as they look at the schedule coming up, they go, if we want to see what this kid can do,
mm-hmm.
says Doug Wilson certainly has never been afraid to throw a rookie in the middle of the playoff push.
No, that's true.
I mean, he did it with Matt Carl. He did it with Marcel Gotch.
Mm-hmm. Look you know, how awesome those guys turned out.
Well, listen, to be fair, dude,
yeah,
they were pretty solid contributors during those playoff runs, right?
I'm
Am
just
I
kidding.
Right, dude?
I'm just kidding.
At least I didn't buy a jersey with one of their names on it.
Oh, well, neither did I in my defense, in my pathetic defense.
Liar!
I didn't buy it.
It was given to you.
It was a gift.
So it's your wife's fault?
In your face. No, it wasn't even my wife who gave it to me.
Who gave that to you?
My sister-in-law.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's her fault.
Yeah.
Let's call her up. Get the Skype going.
Is that the story for this week? Am I off the hook?
No, that's not the story.
I thought we were going to do
no,
the
No, that's not the story.
All right, we'll do that segment later.
Get lost.
Dude,
so I think Petrecki's going to play Saturday night. Now, maybe that Vlasic's out, it's even a little bit more of, or we don't know if he's out or not. I mean, he might be back. But I think regardless, I think the plan was to play him.
Well, considering this is a kid that, you know, by all accounts, needed seasoning in the pro ranks, made a lot of positive strides this year in Worcester. This is not a guy that you want to bring up and sit on the bench. I mean, with all due respect to Derek Jocelyn, he's not Derek Jocelyn. I think we're finally sort of getting a pretty decent picture as to the ceiling on Derek Jocelyn. I mean, he's played a few games this year. He played a few games last year. We sort of know where he's at. We don't have the same feeling about Nick Petrecki. We don't really quite know what his ceiling is yet. And to bring a guy up and sit him on the bench, who is still developing, seems like a stupid idea. Let me just say it.
Stupid
idea.
The S word.
But, you know, like, especially given the cap hit that you just mentioned a minute ago. So, I totally agree with you. He's going to be playing. They're not going to bring him up to sit him. They're going to bring him up to play him. So, with Vlasic out, I guess that makes sense. I don't know who they would... Let's take the thought experiment for a second. Assuming Vlasic was healthy or he was going to be able to play on Saturday, who would you sit?
Wallin.
You think so?
Yeah. The way Huskins is playing?
Yeah. Yes.
That's who would have sat.
I hope everybody's seen the blog because I did a Huskins Photoshop.
Oh, dude,
today.
That was awesome.
It was it worked out pretty well. I was pleased with it. So check it out.
That's just a guess, dude. But and listen, I'm no big Huskins fan. All of a sudden, okay.
Yeah, let's not get crazy.
He had a few classic Huskins moments tonight where he was trying to make a rush and he just could not control the puck.
Yeah.
He's had some good games recently.
Absolutely.
We'll give him that.
I don't want to take that away from him.
So we're kind of waiting on Vlasic, and we'll see if my prediction comes true. You got to imagine that these guys are going to be in the lineup. Otherwise, why the heck are they here?
Yeah. Well, dude, we got to get to emails and tweets because we got tons of stuff. Let's start with this. I'm going
off the rails on a crazy trade.
All right, Jim from Section 202, he's back once again, and Jim's going big on the crazy trade this week. He's proposing to trade Danny Heatley. He's thinking about trading Heatley, Torrey Mitchell, and Ben Ferriero for Zach Bogosian, or the Thrashers' top defensive prospect, Arturs Kulda, or he has another possible trade with Pittsburgh, Heatley, Mitchell, and either Petrecki or Coyle for Chris Letang. And Simon Dupre, who is another prospect of theirs, I think he might have had an amendment email. They might want both Petrecki and Coyle, he said in a second email. So what do you think about these crazy trades? And I don't mean to gloss over too much of Jim's email, but we have so many. And he's saying basically Heatley's numbers have dropped. They've continued to do so. His numbers just aren't the same. We have a sniper who can no longer snipe. So... what do you think about these crazy trades, dude? Do you like them? Do you hate them?
So Atlanta would want him, why? Based on your description?
Atlanta wouldn't want him back.
What are you talking about? He's great at being the fourth guy on a deflection.
Hey, okay.
Bung, 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 bung. There it's it. I think the Pittsburgh one is laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
There's no way they do that.
Yeah. I mean, let's reiterate sort of our thinking for those who may not have heard some previous podcasts is that Pittsburgh has some major injuries. Crosby's out. Malkin's out. We both believe, and Ray Shiro certainly doesn't have a hair trigger when it comes to trades, as far as we can tell. It would just be just flat out lame for them to go out and try and trade a young prospect, a young, very good prospect like Chris Letang, to get some short term help. And they certainly can't take another $7 million salary with Malkin and Crosby
right
on the book. So I think that I would love to have Chris Letang on the Sharks. Let's not.
Oh, yeah. It'd be a great deal for the Sharks.
Great deal for the Sharks, but Pittsburgh would never make that deal.
But think about what are we giving up here? We're giving up Heatley, Mitchell, and Petrecki and Coyle.
Or Petrecki or Coyle. That's a lot.
I mean, that's a lot. Yeah. I think in both cases,
I don't really see either of these.
I don't think either.
I mean, the Bogosian thing makes sense because a lot of accounts, Bogosian is on the move. He doesn't like it there, and Atlanta wants to move him. But there's no way they're going to want to take back Heatley. Remember that he was traded because there's bad memories there for Heatley. He was in that car crash
that resulted
in the death of a friend and a Thrashers player.
Right.
There's no way they're going to try to get him back.
But I think Jim is on to something a little bit in that one in terms that, you know, Atlanta, if they need anything, they need scoring. I think they would be way more interested in Setoguchi than Heatley.
Right.
You know, so let's amend Jim's crazy trade a little bit.
Well, maybe we should go to Chris.
Okay.
Who has a Setoguchi question, because I think we're going to get a lot of these questions here the last couple weeks before the deadline. His question is, with the deadline approaching, it seems like most people have been talking about Seto being the Sharks' most likely trade chip if they want to improve the blue line, yet here he is, fresh off the recent trip, finally contributing in a serious way. Hell, his game against the Preds is arguably his best game all season. Considering the team's relative weakness in the farm system, do you think San Jose can afford to give up someone with as much promise as Devin? Obviously, we'd all be satisfied if Doug Wilson made the trade for the right guy, but I still think there's just as much of a chance of another Bill Guerin situation. Thoughts? So
that just made me throw up a little bit in my mouth. Bill Guerin.
Oh my god! All right. Well, yeah. I mean, the Setoguchi, he's still the biggest chip, and having a good 5 or 10 games doesn't really change the fact that he is probably available. But you're right. It's going to be a situation where it has to be the right situation. And you, if you think about how much the Ducks gave up for Francois Beauchemin, for instance, a guy that you thought the Sharks should go get, what was your analogy to the Sharks? It would be Justin Braun and Setoguchi and a pick for
right.
for Francois Beauchemin. And when you roll that around, you think, man, that's quite a lot to give up for a guy like Francois Beauchemin. And if you're looking to get an even better player, then you're going to have to give up even more than that.
See, now, I think if we had made that deal, it would have been better than it is for the Ducks. Now, the Ducks are loading up for their apparently delusional cup run. I'm not sure what they're doing.
I don't understand.
But they traded their second best prospect in their system. I mean,
yeah.
And Jake Gardner, a guy who could have been playing side by side with Cam Fowler for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they trade him for Beauchemin, who is a good...
Very good player.
...player, but he's 30,
mm-hmm.
and he is kind of built to help a cup contender.
Yeah.
Not a team that could very easily not make the playoffs at all. They did get rid of Leupel's contract, which I think was a win for the Ducks, but not at the price of giving up their second-best prospect. I mean, if you're going to say Fowler's their best. I mean, would you say Gardner's with our limited knowledge of the Ducks system, I mean, mm-hmm. they've got...
I thought Timo Palmar was their number one.
Yeah. Or how about Nick Bonino? He's had such a great impact.
Oops.
Well, I don't think I think that deal's a bit of a wash at the moment.
I think you're right.
Well, if zero's a wash.
Yeah.
So...
I don't know.
I like Toronto's end of that deal a little bit better.
Well, my friend Jeremy, who is a Ducks fan, he said that, you know, Gardner isn't that great of a prospect. And there was a single article on TSN that seemed to say, well, if you look at that draft class, Jake Gardner probably shouldn't have gone as high as he did. There's a lot of other people drafted in the first round of that year that are now playing in the NHL, and he's not.
But he's in college. I mean, these guys who go to college, they do it for 3 years normally.
Not all of them.
Well, the kid played in World Juniors. He was pretty good. Isn't he scoring over a point a game at Wisconsin?
I think he's, yeah.
Yeah.
As a defenseman.
Yeah, kid sucks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to revisit this, dude, when we're not on the air in 3 years.
Right. That's right.
No, we're going to come back and we're going to look at this trade. And we're going to go, Brian Burke did a good job on this one.
I think so, too.
I think that he's willing to take the risk. He's got the cap space to absorb Leupel. And, you know, I think in the long run, when the Ducks do not make the playoffs, we're going to think that move was pretty funny.
They might make the playoffs, but I'm with you. I can't imagine that they're going to make some magical run. I mean, you look at their third and fourth lines, you look at their defensive depth.
Well, they did add Jarkko Ruutu today for another real puzzling price. A sixth rounder?
For Jarkko Ruutu.
That's like Jody Shelley price.
I know.
That's the best.
Has his stock fallen that much?
Apparently so.
And Chris Kelly goes for a second rounder.
I know. Well, let's get back to the question, right?
There was a question?
Weren't we talking about Setoguchi's value?
Setoguchi's value.
His general value, right?
So let's look at another.
This is a Twitter question here from Redland Mover.
Okay.
Or is it Redland Mover? I'm going to go Redland Mover.
Yeah.
Thoughts on the recent Versteegen-Leupel trade and how they affect Seto's trade value?
Yeah, this is an excellent point, an excellent question. The Versteeg trade in particular crystallizes what Seto's value is, in my opinion. I think those two players are very similar in a lot of ways. They're young players. They're scorers. They're a little streaky. What did Versteeg get? What did Versteeg fetch?
First and a third.
A first and a third. That's a lot more than I would have normally expected for Setoguchi. So I would have to say that's the bar now for Setoguchi, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, or the equivalent in terms of a player value.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that?
It was a late first round.
It was a late first round.
So it's going to be a late 20s first round pick.
So, but that's still two young prospects, all
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
What's more valuable, the unknown, a pick, or a guy like Jake Gardner? Is Setoguchi the equivalent of Jake Gardner in a trade value?
No, you can't.
He's not?
He's worth more than Jake Gardner.
He is?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it realistic to say that, you know, Setoguchi could straight up fetch us one of these guys that we're talking about, like a Pitkinen. Is Setoguchi and a very late pick, like a fifth or fourth, enough? Apparently, maybe.
I think it might be. Now I'm starting to think it might be, especially if you're talking about a guy like Pitkinen who's going to be an unrestricted free agent in the summertime. We're not talking about a lot of time in a Sharks jersey before he has to get paid. So, yeah, I think that might be the value we're talking about. And the loophole trade is, you know, it's the same kind of thing. I think that means Seto is...
What is Torrey Mitchell's value?
Not much.
Really?
He doesn't have a lot of points, man.
I know, but... He's younger than Chris Kelly. He's signed for another year. I mean, the other thing we've got to take into account.
Chris Kelly has 25 points. Torrey Mitchell has 10.
All right.
They're not the same player. Not anymore. Maybe we wanted Torrey Mitchell to become what Chris Kelly is now, and it just unfortunately has not happened.
So the thing Versteeg has over Seto is that he's signed for another year.
Okay.
So you have that locked in. You've got him at $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to imagine, you know, Seto's going to be maybe, I mean, he's not having an outstanding year, right? So he'll probably come in the, what's he making now? The high 1.8 or something like that?
Yeah.
So he'll come in the mid twos as a restricted free agent.
I think that seems
just
right.
As things are kind of sticking now. So, I would think he'd have a lot of value, at least the same as Versteeg, if not more. But I don't think Wilson's looking for picks here. I think he's looking for a player.
He's looking for players. So should we move to the next discussion that we're going to have here?
Yes.
This is the Ian. Are we moving to the Ian White discussion?
I think we shall.
Okay, please.
There's a couple of players that have been bandied about now. Ian White has been scratched. I don't know if Carolina played tonight and if he was scratched tonight, but he sat out the last couple games. His ice time has gone considerably down, and Jim Rutherford has been, you know, basically said that they had a offer in place for Ian White, and they're holding him out right now as they consider what they want to do.
Mm.
Ian White is a guy that we talked about all the way at the beginning of the year as a player that Calgary had before they moved into Carolina, that we were interested in seeing in Teal. Dude, should the Sharks pick up the phone and make the call and get Ian White in Teal?
I got to say, I am, given these latest news developments, I am now sour on Ian White. I am a lot more sour on Ian White now than I was at the beginning of the season, who seemed to be a very good offensive contributor as a defenseman for the Calgary Flames, came over in the Dion Phaneuf deal. Now he's been traded to Carolina in a deal that we were a little bit disappointed to learn about because we were hoping maybe he'd be traded to the Sharks. And now, only a few months later, he's already played himself off the team. To me, that is a huge red flag. I can't name a single good player that has been dealt, traded away from two teams in this short amount of time. I think Doug Wilson should pass unless there is a... you know, a very light price to pay for this guy, because it doesn't seem like, you know, Jay Feaster, obviously, well, was that still Daryl Sutter technically when he was traded
well,
the first
yeah,
time?
Yeah, it was Daryl Sutter with Jay Feaster's hand up his butt.
Right. Yeah. As a
making
puppet.
The moves.
Right. So we have Jim
Rutherford. I'm going to trade your family as the last move.
So we have Jim Rutherford, who's a longtime GM, and Jay Feaster, who is a guy that I know we respect as a general manager. Both of these guys basically wanted him out of town. This makes me decidedly wary about the value of Ian White. Are you equally sour?
Well, dude, I don't know. It's hard to know when something goes wrong with a player in a certain location. Like, did Calgary trade Ian White because they didn't like him or because they thought they couldn't re-sign him? I mean, that... Calgary's got a lot of problems in terms of money committed to their blue line. I mean, they've got a lot of dollars locked into Saric, who's basically unmovable. They gave Giordano a big contract. They've got Regier making over $4 million, right?
Five, I think.
And they've got Bomeister making a ton of money, and Ian White is making $3 million. He's going to be unrestricted in a year. He's going to make at least $3 million.
I would think, yeah.
He's going to make that. At least. And they probably figured they couldn't keep him. So they dealt him for Anton Babchuk, who, you know, wants to go to Russia one day and now he wants to be back. And he wants to go to Russia one day and now he wants to be back.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured we can't keep him. Let's get something in return. Why he's not working out in Carolina, I'm kind of looking at his numbers. I mean, he doesn't have a goal. He's got 10 assists. He's a plus four. He's blocked 68 shots in 39 games. That's two shots game almost.
Yeah, less, and a little less, but yeah,
that's not bad.
It's not bad.
53 shots on goal. It doesn't look like numbers of someone who's totally sucks. Like,
yeah,
I guess let's be realistic here in terms of, like, last year he had 38 points,
it's right, really
between
good.
Toronto and Calgary, and he was a plus eight. This year he has 16 points in 55 games.
Right.
So significantly
mid-20s,
he's 10 points off. But is that a reflection of him not playing enough in Calgary? And then, I don't know, maybe the guy hates it in Carolina.
Yeah, maybe they don't have any good strip clubs in Carolina or something.
I mean, this guy's from Manitoba. I mean, you know, he's now living in Carolina. Like, he was in Toronto, then he was in Calgary, and now he's in Carolina.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe Ian's not down with the BBQ.
Maybe he's not. The RTC.
So
RTP.
It's very likely the guy's just like, there's a 0% chance I'm re-signing here, so you may as well move me.
That's right. Maybe you're talking me into this now. Maybe he said, yeah, I'm not interested in re-signing, or they talked to him about re-signing, and he said, I'm not interested, and they said, okay, we're going to deal you.
I mean, this guy sucks all of a sudden. I mean, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
I don't buy it, dude. I think, I've got Mikey on the ropes. I think that his value is significantly down, that this is vintage Doug Wilson.
Yeah, this is true. This is absolutely true.
This is vintage Doug Wilson. Yeah. He's got Rutherford, like, kind of on the ropes.
He's already scratched. Like, they know, I mean, basically they've severed their connection with Ian White. Like, they have to deal him.
Right. So, hey, how about a sixth rounder and Ken Huskins?
Yeah, Huskins in a big gulp. Huskins in all you can eat chicken at Smoke Eaters.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't put it past the Sharks to make that move. But the thing that's got to go with this is that in order to fit him in, a salary player, according to Cap Geek, from what I saw, a salary player has to move. So they would have to take back someone from... It's not like this could be a deal for picks, like some other guys I have here. You know, you could get Joe Corvo for a pick because he's making less money.
Right.
But because Ian White is making more money, you have to take back a salary player. So, I mean, this is a situation where, you know, Ian White might be able to be had for, you know, if the prize is a fourth rounder, then they also have to take Kent Huskins.
Right.
Because the Sharks have to get his money off the books.
Right.
So, not sure. We'll see.
I could live with that deal. That's for sure.
Well, I know.
I mean, let's get realistic. That's not going to happen.
Pie in the sky, dude.
Yeah,
but
that's not going to happen.
I wouldn't count the Sharks out of that race. What about a guy like Mark Stewart, who we've heard has been scratched for Boston? Any interest in Stewart?
Not a lot. He's not on the same level as the guys we've been talking about. And I can't see him making a big impact with the Sharks. And we talked to Mark Purdy, you know, last week, and he's talked several times about how Doug Wilson has this ghost roster, and I can't think that Mark Stewart is on the ghost roster, you know?
who'd have ever thought that Ken Huskins was on the ghost roster?
Well, I think maybe Huskins was part of the deal to get Moan, but then, of course, he resigned Huskins.
Did the ghost roster put a gun to Doug Wilson's head and make him re-sign him? He could have been buried somewhere. I've got one more question for you, dude.
All right.
Another name that's been coming up recently is a player that, frankly, I think you were a little surprised when I mentioned him to you because we probably thought he wasn't available, but John Michael Lyles, who we're going to see on Saturday night. You know, you're seeing his name mentioned not just in the lunatic blogs like Eklund, but you're seeing it come up in, on ESPN. Mm-hmm. EJ Raddick has mentioned him, I believe. I think he's even been mentioned on TSN. Is it?
That is so surprising.
He's making a lot of cash, so that would be certainly a more significant deal.
He's 30 years old, which I thought he was a little younger than that, but he's 30 years old. He's making a lot of money. He's their highest paid defenseman. But they got a lot of young kids. They don't have a lot of salary problems. I don't know why they need to deal a guy like that. Unless there's a problem with him and coaching or management or something.
Well, it seems like they're having a major problem anyways with the, you know, Joe Sacco seems to have lost that team a little bit. He's scratched Chris Stewart.
Oh,
you know,
please. Whatever. I mean, they just, you know, they played way above their head last year. They sunk, they regressed towards the mean, to use a statistical phrase, this year. And now he's trying to shuffle the deck a little bit, and everybody thinks he sucks all of a sudden. It's like, come on, man.
I'm not saying he sucks. I'm saying that if the Avs finish out of the playoffs, he's going to get canned.
Joe Sacco?
Yep.
That'd be a dumb move.
Beer?
I'll take that bet.
Okay.
Absolutely.
They're going to can him. You're going to go with Colorado's management's decision making?
That's a good point.
Maybe they'll hire Tony Granato again.
Third time. He's like the Billy Martin of hockey. Oh, man.
I mean, because Tony Granato, that was all his fault both times.
I'm interested in Lyles, but I don't like the salary troubles me. How many more years does he have?
One more year. Okay. He's making four. Yeah, I mean, it would have to be a major deal.
That's another tough contract to fit under the structure, and especially with all the other guys that are making a lot of
money.
Dude,
we didn't talk about the Jay Leach trade.
Oh, what an oversight that is.
Jay Leach and Steven Zaleski basically to the Lowell Devils.
Yeah, or, back to the Devils.
Two prospects. We've got Patrick Davis and Mike Swift. I have cared so much, I've not even noticed if they've played for Worcester or not. Dude, your thoughts on the Jay Leach trade?
I think we should all read Sharks' page to see if they played in the latest Worcester games, because that's what I'm going to do. Dude, let's move on. We're running out of time, dude.
What?
We got more Twitter stuff.
Me too.
Don't you have more Twitter?
No, that was it.
That was all we have for Twitter?
We got some props on Twitter.
Oh, we did?
Someone told us that they enjoyed the podcast. Let's see. Iron Metzlas 222. Love the podcast. You guys are informative and hilarious at the same time. Keep up the good work.
All right.
And Zero Indulgence says that Pecorino is a top five goalie. Yeah.
I think he's responding
tweeting
to one of my
during friends. The Nashville game, and people were responding, dude. We got some props on the website this week.
Didn't we?
Some people.
All right. Someone said.
Our friend.
Your logic related mistakes and misinformation is not very good. But so I thought I'd let you know, even though the bar is very low and it's not saying much, you guys are still the best Sharks podcast. Now that is something I'm going to embroider on a little sheet and put it up on my wall next to my home sweet home one, because
the bar is very low.
That, yeah.
But we are still, we're the best of the worst.
Yeah. It's like we won the Who's Taller Than Mickey Rooney contest.
Congrats, Emmanuel Lewis.
Wow. I feel good. I slept real well that night.
That's the best backhanded compliment I've ever got in my life.
Me too. I got to say, that was pretty awesome.
Fantastic.
Okay, dude, let's move on to another question that I got.
Okay.
Well, Chris from Boston, let's move this really quickly. It's another Danny Heatley question, but he says Danny Heatley's compete levels dropped off, and he says, does Dan Boyle look tired? Do you have a comment on either of those statements?
Gosh, I don't think Dan Boyle looks tired to me. I haven't noticed that. Have you noticed anything with Dan Boyle?
No, and I haven't noticed Danny Heatley's compete level getting, dropping down. I think it may have been an email that we forgot to read on the air, but I think someone actually looked at behindthenet.ca, which has some advanced plus minus stats, and Danny Heatley's numbers in terms of Corsi, if you want to look up what that is, which is sort of a more advanced plus minus, are actually pretty decent. So
right.
he looks sort of wobbly out there sometimes. I mean, he's not the greatest skater, but. You know, I don't see a major drop off from Danny Heatley this year.
I know what Chris is talking about sometimes, because I do feel like, you know, we've mentioned Marlowe sometimes gliding into the play, and I feel like I see Heatley do that a lot. And sometimes he's the guy who doesn't get back on those plays. We're noticing how great Joe Thornton was defensively tonight. I mean, he really was outstanding, and you don't necessarily see Heatley making that kind of effort to get in on the defensive plays. I don't think that's where he thrives. But in terms of compete level, I wouldn't say it's as high as Scott Nichols, but I think it's still pretty par for the course for the Heater.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really, you know, this is sort of what I knew we were going to get. So I don't feel that that bad about it. Actually, I'm going to let Scott have the last word. And,
okay.
And he says, dudes, is Peter Forsberg the biggest douche on the planet? Yeah, maybe.
I think his spleen is.
That's Dude, been long gone.
Come on. This guy goes to all the effort of coming back. He skates in, what, two games?
Two games.
Minus four. He takes the Avalanche's good cash, and he goes home.
Not a lot.
No.
Takes two games worth.
Two games worth of his $1 million salary.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think that is? Let's see. Let's do some quick math, dude. Okay, 82 divided by a million. Come on.
82?
Come on.
It's more than 82 because it's not a game check. You get paid by the day. So it's not a lot of money. It's well under $100,000. It's probably like, you know, 10 or 20 grand. I mean, that's a rounding error for an NHL team.
So he made 20 grand, dude. That's a lot of money.
But he is a douche.
Do you think he'll try and come back again?
I hope not.
I wish I could say I feel sorry for him, but I don't. And I'm glad that he's not.
He never should have come back.
No.
Let's just be honest. He was an absolutely fantastic player, probably the best player in the NHL for probably a fairly short period of time. But he was an unstoppable force in the NHL at his prime. For him to come back to the NHL and know in two games that he couldn't cut it means to me that he just flat out didn't do his due diligence, or the Avalanche didn't either. I don't know why you would go through all this training and then figure out, oh yeah, two games in, I can't do it anymore. I'm done.
Bigger douche.
I'm going to Disneyland.
Ed Belfour or Peter Forsberg?
Ed Belfour is always a bigger douche.
Awesome.
Always.
Nice.
Always. Dude, are we going to the new segment that we started in last week? Okay, let's hit that too.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you.
I am so scared because it's Doug's turn this week.
Do you know that my friend Michael loves cupcakes? It's true.
It's not actually that true, but go on.
It is. You love a delightful cupcake, especially one out of a package.
On occasion.
And Mike managed to ruin a Valentine's Day for me one time where we gone over to a friend's house, and she had cupcakes for us. And
an attractive friend of yours.
Yes, yes. And we were going to the movies, and for some reason I thought it'd be a good idea to bring you, which I don't know.
Talk
I don't
about
know
your
how...
all-time backfires.
And so we have these cupcakes. We're getting ready to go. We're going to see Army of Darkness, dude.
That's right.
Army of Darkness. This is my boomstick.
Needless to say, this is a while ago.
And dude has his cupcake. He's sitting there, and I just notice after a couple minutes he's not there. And Mikey is at my friend's house blowing cupcakes all over their bathroom.
I just booted once. It was clean.
And then instead of going to the movies, I had to take you home.
Yeah. Dude, actually, I did you a favor now that you think about it, right?
You did.
Am I right?
You did. But that was that's not a way to do a solid for a friend.
Dude, I was sick. I booted. You gave me a bad cupcake. You're the one who gave it to me. It's not like I went out and bought it. You gave it to me. Hey, Mike, have this cupcake. It looks so great.
Because I meant to do that.
It's only been sitting on my counter for 6 or 8 weeks.
I poisoned you?
Yes, you did.
You think I did?
I do believe that.
You do have a history. Okay. We're going to save it.
Okay.
Okay. There's more.
Oh, there's more. There's more.
Way to go.
Oh, no.
I'm going to do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live.
Yeah.
That never gets old.
No. Never.
Until we play it a few more times, it'll get kind of old.
I don't think so.
You got another story now? Or you're done?
No, I'm done.
Oh, sweet.
It's just one.
Oh, I was worried that you were going to have like another embarrassing story.
I have several. Trust me, I've been racking my brain, but I think 44 minutes of podcast is plenty.
I think it's plenty. And we got more trade deadline stuff next week, so get those tweets in.
Trade deadline special next week.
And go Sharks. We got
Colorado on Saturday. It's a bit of a short turnaround for us, so we'll be back.
Next Wednesday.
What is the schedule? As it's being blocked here on your screen. We have a road trip coming up.
We have Colorado, and then we have the Wings on Tuesday and Pittsburgh on Wednesday.
All right, we'll be back sometime either after the Detroit or Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic.
Talk to you then.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.